Funding for The Front Row on Texas Tech Public Radio comes from the Helen Jones Foundation and from Citibank. Citibank's award-winning app delivers features that are redefining mobile banking, like the ability to turn your debit card off if it's ever lost or stolen, and the ability to raise ATM and spending limits. More information is at citibankonline.com. Citibank, member FDIC. Support also comes from Texas Tech's J.T. and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts. Art, music, theater, and dance. Dean Noel Zoller invites you to enjoy some of the 800 performances and exhibits produced each year by talented students, faculty, and visiting artists. See the stars of tomorrow on the stage today. Texas Tech's J.T. and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts. Explore, dream, discover. And from Lubbock's Cultural District. Always creative, never flat. More information is available at lubbockculturaldistrict.org. That's the Lubbock Symphony Orchestra rehearsing Wednesday night in the Lubbock Memorial Civic Center Theater in preparation for concerts this weekend. I took the opportunity during last night's rehearsal to visit with Mary Satoff, who is president and CEO of the Lubbock Symphony.
Well, Mary Satoff, as you can hear in the background, we're getting ready for another Lubbock Symphony concert. Tell us about it.
Well, this is a great concert, and you can hear the flute in the background. We are having this most wonderful flutist, Jasmine Choi, coming to perform with us. And I feel like I've come full circle, because it was the flute, after doing piano, that was my first instrument. And actually, I went in to the music store and I pointed at the piccolo, that's what I wanted to play. And they said, no, you have to start with flute first. And really, a lot of people in Lubbock don't know, and I went to college on a flute scholarship and then switched to voice.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it's just so fantastic. And then, so she's going to be playing a Haydn flute concerto. But then on either side of that, we are playing our beloved Brahms, variations on a theme by Haydn. And then on the second half, his final fourth symphony.
Right. What a wonderful program. Brahms about Haydn,
right.
Haydn and Brahms.
Right.
Wonderful.
Right.
For people who are intrigued, how can they get tickets?
There are three very easy ways. 24 hours a day, lubbocksymphony.org. And if you go to our homepage, there's a buy now button, a link right there. You can call us during business hours at 762-1688. Come down to our offices at 601 Avenue K.
Right. And you have a special incentive, I know, for college students to get the college crowd out as well. Tell us about that.
Well, and especially if you're just now, you're listening to this and you're starting freshman, or you haven't participated in this, if you come 20 minutes, so 10 minutes before curtain, for $5 in cash, you can come in. So.
What a great opportunity.
It's a very cheap date,
right.
and a fantastic date.
You get a great concert.
That's
exactly.
Right.
Right. Mary Satoff, I just want to say how grateful the Lubbock community is to you for all of the wonderful work that you have done with the symphony, that you will do with the symphony. The symphony is better than ever, and so much of that is due to your hard work and your vision, so thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been my honor to do so.
I caught up with Lubbock Symphony Orchestra Music Director David Cho to help us understand the musical content of the performances that will be given Friday and Saturday night in the Lubbock Memorial Civic Center Theater.
Maestro Cho, thank you for taking the time to visit with us ahead of this concert. What a wonderful program. You have Brahms with Haydn, and then Brahms. What a great program. Tell us about it. Unpack it for us.
Well, when we thought of, you know, the pairing of the autumnal fourth symphony along with the Haydn variations, we thought, well, I mean, you know, we should have a concerto that has to do with either Brahms or Haydn. We're thinking, we've done the violin concerto by Brahms in the recent past, and Mary said, well, we haven't had a flute soloist in a long time. And I knew Jasmine from a long time ago during my New World days when we met at a seminar in New York. And, well, she just came to mind because she's so great and she's been traveling the world. And I asked her, you know, would you be interested in playing with the Lubbock Symphony? And she just jumped on the idea. And I gave her the programming, the variations, and the Fourth Symphony. And she said, I guess we have to do the Haydn flute concerto. And she just told me that she performed in her first public performance with this piece. So that's very, very neat. Right. I talked about this many times during the education concerts this week when we performed for 5,000 students on Tuesday morning. The Haydn variations, the theme was actually not written by Haydn. So that's an interesting historical fact.
That's a chorale tune.
Yeah, St. Anthony.
St. Anthony, right.
Chorale.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's one of a very first orchestral works by Johannes Brahms. As you know, he was pressured by the public, and of course, Robert Schumann prophesied that Brahms was going to be the next Beethoven, so it took him 43 years to write his first symphony, which is still yet to come, I think. Yeah? So this is, you know, he spent a lot of time. And if you look at it carefully, it's a great masterpiece. The finale of the theme and variations is actually another set of theme and variations. Of course, we know the composition technique called Passacaglia. And, you know, we thought the last movement of the Fourth Symphony also being Passacaglia, oh, it's a no-brainer to put those two pieces together.
Right. So. It's like a ground bass, a bass that repeats and over and over again, over
exactly.
Which there's a set of variations.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
People will be able to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah. People always mention, why did Brahms have that big, thick beard? You know, he was a very self-conscious person. And a lot of the critics said that, you know, his variations, trying to pick out the theme is like trying to see his face behind that big thick beard. You know, I think he was trying to hide from the pressure and the criticism. And you know Robert Schumann said he's going to be the next Beethoven, and this must have put a lot of pressure on his shoulders.
Hard to live up to.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, tell us about the Fourth Symphony. You know, there are very few works in the orchestral literature that end badly. Sibelius 4, Mahler 6, Brahms 4. I mean, it's a tough end, tough
uh-huh.
ending.
Uh-huh.
How do you prepare mm-hmm. over the course of a long symphony to not end happily?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Best of my days is in the morning when I sort of, you know, meditate over these notes, you know, what does it all mean? And, you know, I solfege it, I kind of struggle over the pacing of the whole symphony, or the movement, or even a phrase, and what to bring out, and, you know, just being a conductor, you know, you become very detail-oriented. And I think just spending a lot of time on it, just, and on a concert evening, just kind of let it go. I think that's just my motto. And also, I spoke to many donors here who know a lot about music, and Furtwängler happens to be one of their favorite recordings. I mean, if you hear the Berlin Philharmonic's old recordings, oh my God, it's just hideous, you know, out of tune, not together. But apparently Furtwängler, I'm trying to remember the name of this musicologist, what is that, you know, the analysis, Schenkerian analysis. Yeah, he spent a lot of time with that musicologist who, you know, developed the Schenkerian analysis. And, you know, if you listen to the recording just a few more times, you'll notice how he creates this long, big arc, not only over the course of a phrase or a section, but movement, whole symphony. And it kind of helps you to kind of forget about those, you know, the out-of-tune stuff in the 1950s, 60s recording. And I think more and more I do this, I become less and less consumed by little details. One of my good friends told me, you know, one of the art of perfecting your discipline is simplicity, and then go to complexity, And you have to come back to simplicity. You have to travel through the toil and the work in order to become more profoundly simple. And I think that's what Frankl achieved. So I hope, you know, maybe in 30 years or something, when I'm 70 with more gray hair, hopefully I'll be able to understand.
For our listeners, as you mentioned, Shankarian analysis, Shankar was very famous for talking about how music exists in the foreground, in the middle ground, in the background, and that there are certain ways in which melodies arrive and things. And he became very famous for his analyses of this piece. And that's what you're referring to, is Shankarian analysis.
Yes.
And it helps you put the piece in perspective, I guess.
Exactly. And kind of, you know, from afar, you know, you should be able to shrink everything down to two notes or
one note.
Yeah.
That's right.
So that's very, it's been an amazing journey for me this past few months, just kind of meditating on what Brahms was thinking about, his variations, of course, talking to the students, the fifth graders, you know, talking to them as if the music is something fun and ecstatic. It got me inspired, you know, and got me out of this kind of a cerebral mind. And I think I want to just encourage everybody listening, you know, if you want to be a musician, I think in the end you really have to love it. And I think I'm becoming more and more loving for the music. And I think, I hope we can all exude to the Lubbock community that we exist because for the love of music.
Absolutely. Well, best of luck in these upcoming concerts.
Thank you.
Brahms about Haydn. Haydn, and then Brahms again.
Yes.
Wonderful.
All great stuff.
Absolutely. Maestro Cho, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Clint.
The featured soloist on this weekend's concerts by the Lubbock Symphony Orchestra is Jasmine Choi.
So we're visiting with Jasmine Choi. Jasmine, welcome. We're so happy that you're going to be here and play with the Lubbock Symphony.
Yay! Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Where are you from?
I'm originally from South Korea. I was born in Seoul to a musical sort of family and grew up there until when I was 16 years old and moved to Philadelphia. That was a real long, big step for me. I entered the Curtis Institute of Music, studied with Julius Baker and Jeffrey Kaner, then went on to Juilliard School for the master's degree, and then I played 6 years in Cincinnati Symphony. After that, moved on to Vienna Symphony, and I am still in Austria, but not in Vienna anymore. It's the city right next to a big lake, and it's called Bregenz. And I live there, and when I'm not traveling, it's really a vacation place. It's a real summer holiday place for Austrians. And it's a lovely place to be there between the tours, you know. So.
Wow, what a resume.
Resume.
Curtis and Juilliard, wonderful teachers, Baker and.
Oh, you know them too.
Oh, it's fantastic.
That's wonderful.
And to play in Cincinnati and Vienna, fantastic.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
When did you know you liked the flute?
Before I play the flute, actually. So I picked the instrument myself. I was playing the violin for a long time, since when I was two and a half, I would say, and never liked it, never was interested. I was just playing it because I thought everyone was playing the instrument anyway, because I was surrounded with a lot of musicians in my mom's family. But what got me really into the music was the recorder. When I was 9 years old, no, it was 8 years old, that I had to play one piece on the recorder as a homework in the music class. And it was so much fun that I was just playing all day long, day and night, until I went to bed and I wake up and the first thing I've done was playing the recorder. And then I felt like I needed more notes. I knew only a few notes, let's say one octave, and I was very lucky to have this neighbor upstairs who was playing the flute all day long, and she was very, very good. And back then I thought, wow, she has so many more notes than I have, so I should play that instrument. So I was convincing my parents. They said, no, you should just concentrate on violin or piano, what you've been doing, please, please. And then they surprised me as my 9th birthday. The flute was my birthday present. And since then on, I've been keep playing, keep loving it. It was a joy.
Fantastic. Tell us about the Haydn Concerto. What do you like about the Haydn Concerto?
Actually, the suggestion first came from David, but as soon as I heard his suggestion, I overjoyed it because this was my very first flute concerto that I've learned. And this was the piece I played in my very first public concert with an orchestra. That was back in 1994. I was 10 years old, and that was, I think, just 1 year after I started playing the flute. So it's a very emotionally connected piece for me. Back then, I only played one movement, the first movement, and then somehow never got a chance to play this again because I think flutists, they have, as a classical era, we have two Mozart concertos for flute and another Mozart concerto for flute and harp, and Mozart Andante, and sometimes we play Rondo from the violin piece. So we are pretty full when it comes to the classical era. And a lot of 20th century virtuoso pieces, like Ibert, Jolivet, and Romantic era, Reinecke. So Haydn is a little bit overshadowed by all these other pieces. And I would say the lesser the note they are, the more difficult it could be. So I think people fear to play this piece, or that's at least my interpretation, or it's just simply forgotten. Yeah. However, it's a real pleasure to revisit this piece. Haydn wrote this piece as a part of court concerts. You know, he spent most of his time as a court composer. That's why a lot of his works are very small. I would say it's not huge orchestrated, except for the Creation and the Seasons with the choir. It's a spectacular works. I think he just concentrated on his loyalty to the Esterházy family. I really appreciated his personality like that because it shows also in his writing. However, we are playing this in front of 1,400 people, so imagine. Haydn would have been a little surprised.
Yeah. What would you like the people listening, what would you like them to take home from your concert? What would you like them to feel when you're done?
Well, first of all, having a flute as a soloist, it's not every week for sure. Even in the big orchestras, flutes as a soloist is, I would say, one every 3 years at most, or normally every 5 years. So I hope they're first of all find out about the flute, a little bit of a new experience, rather than having piano or the violin. And I would be very happy if they have this feeling after my concert, wow, flute can be a nice solo instrument too. It was very pleasant, really fun, and we saw a lot of colors in the flute and possibilities in the flute. That's my hope, but we'll see, because I cannot control the audience. It's completely up to them. It's like, you know, fashion or food, it's all in their favor. They can interpret it all they want, and all their interests are different. But I will do my best, and we'll have a lot of fun on stage, that's for sure.
Well, Jasmine Choi, thank you very much.
The Lubbock Symphony Orchestra presents concerts this Friday and Saturday evening in the Lubbock Memorial Civic Center Theater. Ticket information is available at lubbocksymphony.org or at 762-1688. I'm Clint Barrick. Thank you for tuning in to The Front Row on Texas Tech Public Radio.